And welcome to TwerpCast, episode 35, Chen Cast. This time we will discuss Jackie Chan and his fists of fury. We'll explore his blood fingers and find out if he's really Mr. Nice Guy, or is that just a half a loaf of kung fu? I'd like to introduce you to James Fearless Hyena Caswell, executive producer of TwerpCast, and spy most likely to wet his pants if confronted by Jackie Dragon Fist Chan.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-founder of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions and three-time winner of the Sammo Hung Lookalike Contest. He has yet to achieve his lifelong dream, however, of becoming Kelly Hughes' body makeup artist.
Woohoo! Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about Jackie Chan?
You mean Chan Kong Sang? He was born on April 7th, 1954, in Hong Kong. When he was born, his parents nicknamed him Pao Pao because he weighed 12 pounds at birth, and Pao Pao is Chinese for cannonball. His parents were Chinese Civil War refugees, and they worked for the French consul, which meant that Jackie spent the first several years of his life growing up in the French consulate in Hong Kong. In 1960, his father migrated to Australia to become a cook for the American embassy. And it was at that point in his life that Jackie started school and didn't do so well at it. He failed his first year of school, which caused his parents to put him into the China Drama Academy, which was a Peking opera school run by Master Yu Jim-yong. It was during his time at the China Drama Academy that led him to eventually become a member of the Seven Little Fortunes. Other members of this drama troupe that eventually went on to some form of fame were Sammo Hung and Yung Bao. And of course, it was through the Seven Little Fortunes that he got his first film role. The China Drama Academy was a good stepping stone into the entertainment industry for these people. Jackie ended up doing a lot of bit parts, stunt roles, walk-ons, up into 1976, when he didn't feel as though a film career was really going to pay off for him, and so he moved to Canberra with his parents. While he was there, he attended Dixon College and worked in construction. One of his fellow workers was named Jack, and he took him under his wing, showing him the ropes, and after a while, people started calling Chan Little Jack. Not too much later, the nickname got shortened down into Jackie, which is what he stuck with for the rest of his acting career. It was about this time that he also changed his Chinese name from Chan Kong Sang, which translates into born in Hong Kong, to Fong Si Long, and he did this because his father's surname was Fong. He wanted to take back some of his family heritage. Now, admittedly, we're just kind of glossing over his family history and his life before film. It goes into much more detail in his autobiography, I Am Jackie Chan, My Life in Action. It's a very good book, very entertaining to read. I believe that both Doug and I have both read it.
Yes, we have both read this book. It really gives you a lot of insight into the mind of Jackie Chan and his style of martial art movies, which is considerably different than the stereotypical Hong Kong movie. You can see his drama school and his operatic background in the martial arts that he makes in these movies, which is really a great segue to talk about his movie career.
As we said earlier, Seven Little Fortunes really gave him a fairly successful career as a child actor for the brief period of time that he was able to be a child actor. It wasn't like in American society where a child actor can actually be a child actor until they're the age of 25. For the most part, once he hit his teenage years, he was eligible for playing parts as a grown man and was expected to do so. I mean, there's really not a lot of call for a 13-year-old martial artist in a kung fu action flick, at least not as a lead role. He spent a lot of his time as a stunt coordinator, but what he really wanted to be was a leading man. But he found that he was really, really good at stunt coordination, so they used him a lot as a stunt extra. When Bruce Lee needed someone to spar with in Fist of Fury, they called in Jackie Chan because he was one of the best at what he was doing at the time. Bruce Lee was a hero of his during his days in the China Drama Academy, so getting to work with him on Fists of Fury and later in Enter the Dragon was actually a big boon for Jackie Chan. Unfortunately, Bruce Lee died very shortly after finishing filming Enter the Dragon, and Willie Chan, the producer of a lot of Bruce Lee's films, saw Jackie as a potential replacement for Bruce Lee. He had seen him in John Woo's Hand of Death and had decided, we need to find a replacement for Bruce Lee, someone that the public can enjoy going to see and can rake in the big bucks for us. So he cast him in New Fists of Fury, and while Jackie, as we said, is very, very proficient in the martial arts, it just didn't work. It really failed at the box office. So again, Jackie was kind of relegated to the uncredited stunt coordinator, stunt stand-in role, till he really hit his stride in 1978 with a movie called Drunken Master. He was given the lead role and was able to infuse the martial arts with a sense of comedy. And this fusion is what really allowed him to break out of the Bruce Lee mold and make a name for himself. Unfortunately, it was a little bit like lightning because they tried for several years to replicate the comedy action theme and really weren't able to capture it as well as they did in Drunken Master. Then when Willie Chan left the company, Jackie broke contract and moved over to Golden Harvest. It was through Golden Harvest that he became pretty well known as an action star, someone who literally did all of his own stunts. And we're not talking about how American action stars brag, oh, I did all of my own stunts. And what it is that they were strapped head to toe onto the back of a car with no way of them falling down or getting hurt in any way, shape, or form, and, you know, got driven around a set. No, when we say that Jackie Chan did his own stunts, we're talking about things like falling off of the back end of a speedboat, grabbing a hold of a line, getting dragged through the water until he's able to get his feet underneath him, standing up, pulling himself across that rope, and climbing back into the boat, all without a safety harness, all without a safety line, just getting out there and just doing the stunt.
Your first experience with Jackie Chan was really Rumble in the Bronx, and that's a hugely famous one where he's jumping from the fire escape on one building across the street to a lower fire escape on the other building, which is a stunt he did without a wire and managed to break his ankle upon landing and still had to film the rest of the action movie with his broken ankle.
Yes. In the credits, after the movie was over, they showed all of these outtakes, including him falling and breaking his ankle, and then him having to do a water ski stunt with the broken ankle in a cast, and they actually had to make this boot that covered up the cast that looked like a pair of gym shoes. And he did it. He did the stunt with the broken ankle. We're not talking this mamby-pamby, oh, I went and learned how to use a sword for 3 weeks so I could do the choreographed stunt. No, we're talking actually getting on out there, balls to the wall action, stunt work.
Yeah, he went to the Evel Knievel school of stunt action. Much like Evel Knievel, I think he's broken every bone in his body.
Yes, he's rather proud of the fact that he's broken every bone in both hands, broken both legs multiple times, broken his nose, he's broken his back for Pete's sake. And he still continues to get out there and film, or he used to. So if anything, I really feel that that's what made a name for Jackie Chan in Chinese cinema. When people went to go see a Jackie Chan film, yes, they were going for a good martial arts film, but they were also going to see what kind of off-the-wall nut job stunts he was going to pull off next.
Yeah, as far as comedy goes, he was Jim Carrey at the height of his comedy career. As far as action goes, he was Arnold Schwarzenegger on the top of his action movie career. Only the audience that was following Jackie Chan was about 2 billion strong.
He still is a huge name in China cinema.
Yes, which is why American producers decided, hey, we have this really big name person who's never been in an American movie. Let's find a role for him.
We've got to cast him in an American movie so that we can capitalize on all this fame. What do we have coming up? Let's see, we've got this action star that's so well known for doing his own stunt work. Let's put him in a comedy! Let's put him in Cannonball Run with Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise.
In the studio's defense, Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise were at the height of their career also at this point.
This is true. This was post-Smokey and the Bandit, when everything that Burt Reynolds touched turned gold.
But they take a man who doesn't speak a word of English, take him out of his element, which would be kung fu, and stick him behind the wheel of a car.
And say, be funny! Now, admittedly, asking Jackie Chan to do comedy was not that big of a stretch. Asking him to do comedy in English, that was the stretch.
My recollection is they dubbed most of his lines anyways. But again, he was an action star, not a sit-behind-the-wheel-of-the-car-and-tell-jokes star. As I understand it, this was an incredibly bad experience for Mr. Chan, and almost put him off of doing movies in America altogether.
Well, that was in 1981. He came back to do Cannonball Run 2, why I don't know, in 1984. But for the most part, he stayed away from Hollywood until 1998, a good 14 years later, when he came back to do Rush Hour. Now, again, we're talking about a man who has had a successful Chinese cinema career for almost two decades. And when Rush Hour came out, he was treated as if he was the new discovery. For most of American audiences, Chris Tucker was considered to be the star of that show, which is just bordering on insulting.
I don't think it borders it at all, but that's just my opinion. But honestly, that's all right, because by the time Jackie Chan actually got around to making Rush Hour, the Hong Kong cinema was a huge underground movement. Whether it be the Saturday morning Hong Kong shows on syndicated programming or listening to somebody like Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino, I don't like as a director, but when it comes to Hong Kong cinema, that man knows his stuff. John Woo had already made his mark on America, and so a lot of people through the underground knew who Jackie Chan was, and this was a chance for his underground fans to really make him mainstream.
And they did. Rush Hour was a huge success. It allowed Jackie to illustrate both of his talents as a fantastic stuntman actor and as a comedian, and it did well enough that it spawned two sequels.
But not only did it spawn two sequels, it spawned a genuine Hollywood interest in how can we make money off of Jackie Chan.
Yes. The same group that put together the Rush Hour movies put together a pair of old Western films featuring Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson called Shanghai Noon and Shanghai Nights, which again enabled Jackie Chan to step into the limelight and highlight these two normally polarizing forms of entertainment into one cohesive unit.
I guess we could consider those five movies, the three Rush Hours and the two Shanghai movies, we could call those successful American experiences in cinema. There are other Jackie Chan experiences not so successful.
Hollywood saw him as a really bankable market. What they didn't realize, however, was that even the most bankable star needs to have a little thing to support him called a story.
Never stopped Michael Bay from making a movie.
Yes, but it has stopped him from making a good movie. They had essentially built two franchises off of Jackie Chan's talent, but the franchises were limited. It wasn't like they could find a James Bond for him that would catch on like wildfire and they could ride for years and years and years to come. But they kept on trying, and they kept on giving him garbage to work with. Movies like The Tuxedo and The Medallion and Around the World in 80 Days. They figured that if they just slapped Jackie Chan's name on it, that he'd have that Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone type appeal, and people would come to see anything that had Jackie Chan's name on it. Now, in China, it happens. It works. Jackie Chan could take a dump for 50 minutes on the silver screen, and people would pay good money to see it, and it would be a blockbuster hit. But Jackie Chan doesn't have the same following in America that he has in China.
Yes, in American cinema, it's the producers taking a dump all over Jackie Chan, and nobody wants to see that.
Now, I'll admit, I saw The Tuxedo, I saw The Medallion, I even saw Around the World in 80 Days. And the biggest problem that I could see with it was that they were trying too hard to exemplify the comedy aspect of Jackie Chan and weren't allowing him to play to his other strength. Yes, there were martial arts in it, but it seemed very watered down. A lot of wire work involved, a lot of safety harnesses, you know. They let little things like concerns from an insurance company slow them down. I mean, that never stopped Jackie Chan before. Some of his best stuff If he had been worried about what the insurance adjuster was going to say, they never would have made a movie with him.
Well, I think that catches us up to date. And we have another American Jackie Chan movie in the theaters, a little family comedy adventure called The Spy Next Door.
I can honestly say that The Spy Next Door proved to be the exact movie I was anticipating it to be. Unfortunately, my expectations were not very high. Now keep in mind, I love Jackie Chan movies, and I completely understand that Jackie Chan is 55 years old now, and he has thoroughly abused the snot out of his body. As we said earlier, the man probably doesn't have any bones that haven't been broken before. So, you can't expect the same out of a 55-year-old Jackie Chan that you could have expected out of a 25-year-old Jackie Chan. He's just not physically capable of doing it anymore. So, that being said, I wasn't expecting the balls-to-the-wall stunt fest that I would have expected from a movie that he'd made 30 years ago. Unfortunately, they seem to think that instead of giving him a bunch of stunts to do, that they can now offset that by giving him more comedic things to do. And comedic is in quotation marks because what Hollywood seems to find funny and what anyone with half a brain in their head seems to think is funny is often two very different things.
Well, this is just a formula movie. I mean, this movie has been done so many times. You take an actor and you cast him against type. Worked very well with Arnold in Kindergarten Cop. I have no idea how well it worked in Vin Diesel's Pacifier or Hulk Hogan's Mr. Nanny. I mean, it's the same movie again and again, and this time they cast it with Jackie Chan, and, well, it's the same movie again. It's trite, it's overdone, it's not funny.
It might have been good back in the 1980s, or 1880s, when the concept was probably first conceived. Although, I can't think of any Sherlock Holmes does babysitting stories, but hey, you know.
Sherlock Holmes is the dick next door.
Would you stop playing that violin? It's 3 o'clock in the morning! Yeah, the movie takes this cookie-cutter concept. We're going to throw in the fact that he's an international spy because, doggone it, we want Jackie Chan as an international spy. It doesn't matter how many times we have to try to actually cast him in the role and have it fail. They did the same thing in The Tuxedo. They did the same thing in The Medallion. It didn't work in either one of those either.
Well, you see, they have to make him an international spy because he speaks with an accent. So there has to be a reason for him to be in America.
As opposed to being a first-generation American citizen. Because, gee, we don't have any of those anymore.
I'm not sure whether the brain of the average movie executive is smaller or the brain of the average moviegoer is smaller because the executives are always trying to dumb things down. And on the one hand, that's because the executives don't understand high concept. On the other hand, it's because the audience doesn't. So I'm not sure who's dumber.
What we have here is a case of the chicken and the stone.
Yes, but the stone paid to go see that movie.
But then again, so did we.
I'll be honest. It's hard for me to give a review of this movie because I like Jackie Chan. And I think I would much rather do a review of The Karate Kid, which I highly anticipate and I think is going to be a great movie. The truth is, I have really very little good to say about The Spy Next Door. You said it was about where you thought it was going to be, which means that you had higher expectations of the film than I did. The film exceeded my expectations in the fact that it actually amused my 7-year-old. The fact that my 7-year-old laughed at it actually gives it an extra half pen in the pocket protector, because at least there was somebody in the movie theater that was amused by it.
I will agree. One of the best parts of this movie was the trailer before the movie where they showed clips from the new version of The Karate Kid. Because the character of Mr. Han is so much more of what I would expect from Jackie Chan than this movie will ever be.
Yes. Well, they're set for different audiences. There's a total different tone. I obviously can't review The Next Karate Kid, but it looks like it's a reverent, realistic remake of the original. And I really enjoyed the original. And I think putting Jackie Chan in the Mr. Miyagi role is just brilliant casting.
Yes, I completely agree. I am so thoroughly looking forward to seeing The Kung Fu Kid.
So my review of The Spy Next Door is, I can't wait to see The Karate Kid.
But there's more to The Spy Next Door than just Jackie Chan, unfortunately.
Or less, as in the hole gets deeper. And actually, this is a really good point, because one of the major co-stars, the B-star of this movie, is Billy Ray Cyrus. And I couldn't help thinking throughout the whole movie that this should have been a Disney Channel original. It should have been broadcast right after Hannah Montana, because the level of cinematography, the level of acting, the level of writing and directing was like television movie of the week.
Yeah, except for the fact that Billy Ray Cyrus did not have his daughter's coattails to hang off of on this film. And it shows. I mean, the man can't act. He can't act any better than he could sing.
And as much as that breaks my achy breaky heart, he did not belong in that movie. Then again, really nobody did. You know, he is honestly what I call a big second name on this movie. But the fact that he was a bad actor in it was really just par for the course. Jackie Chan was their A-list actor, and everything after that was bad. I thought the kids were bad. I thought the co-stars were bad. There really was very little redeeming about this movie.
I can name two things that I thought were redeeming for this film. The first thing was the opening title sequence.
Yes, the opening title sequence had clips of his other movies, which weren't as bad as this movie.
You say that, and it's humorous, but it's also true. In trying to establish Jackie Chan's character as a secret agent, they went back into his archive and just took action sequences out of various films and put them into a montage specifically to show how great this character is supposed to be, and in effect showed how great of a action hero Jackie Chan is.
I'd have rather watch the other movies.
While on some level that's beside the point, that brings me to my second point. And that's the fact that a lot of the action sequences in this movie were taken almost directly from his previous films. Him fighting using a refrigerator, him fighting using a bicycle, him fighting using the ladder, him fighting using his jacket, him fighting using the frying pans. These are all things that he's done in previous films. Now, I don't know if it was a case of the director just felt such respect for these particular films that he wanted to include them into the movie, or if he just wasn't able to come up with an original idea and Jackie said, well, here, let's put a couple of frying pans here. I've done this before. And I don't know which case it is. I'm hoping that it was the former. I'm trying to give the guy an ounce of credit and say, no, he's actually a fan of Jackie Chan's work, and he wanted to do an homage to the career of Jackie Chan. I really hope that that's what the case was.
I suspect it was somewhere in between. Wow, I'm a really big fan of yours, and I don't have an original idea. Let's do some stuff like you did in your other movies that were actually good.
It was also funny because at the end of the movie, they started doing outtakes. And again, this brought me back to his earlier films, like Rumble in the Bronx, where they do the outtakes showing all of the stunts that just didn't go off without a hitch like they did in the movie. And I was really waiting for those types of scenes. And yes, they did a blooper reel, but it was all acting mistakes, and it didn't feel the same. It felt like an ugly stepchild version of it. In the sequence where we get introduced to Bob the Spy, there's this huge fence that they need to get through in order to get to where the bad guy's at. And during that sequence, I was sitting there going, okay, where's the wall? Where's the wall that Jackie can run up the side of and jump over the fence? Because that is a Jackie Chan thing.
This is a good point, Jim. Because there is a scene where he climbs up the wall. In fact, he climbs up the outside of the neighbor's house. And this was what really set the tone of the movie for me, because it was so obvious that he didn't do his own stunt that they actually cast the stunt actor in a black face mask. Just a guy climbing on the outside of the house, doing incredibly bad wire work.
Horrendous wire work. You can go in and you can erase the wires all you like, but it still doesn't cover up for the fact that it's bad wire work.
Yes. I don't know if it was Jackie just like, I'm too embarrassed to do it, or if he's like, I'm too old to do it, but it was the guy in the face mask until he got to the top of the roof, and there was Jackie Chan pulling off the mask so you could see it was him again. Honestly, as I said before, that set the entire tone of the movie. It said, this is not a Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah, this is us trying to take advantage of the Jackie Chan name, try to give you the feel of it being a Jackie Chan film, but our insurance company just isn't going to let Jackie do what Jackie does best. Shortly before that, there was a scene where the cat was stuck on the roof, and Jackie basically ran up the side of the wall to get onto the roof to get the cat down. And I really do think that that was Jackie. That wasn't a stuntman. But the span that he actually had to jump was probably only about 10 feet, which for Jackie Chan, that'd be like stepping off of a curb.
No, it's true for me and you that would be a feat to jump up 10 feet.
Heck, for you and me, it's a feat to jump up 2 feet.
But yeah, that was not a Jackie Chan stunt.
But as I was saying, there was this huge fence, and I was expecting him to run up the side of it and jump over it, because that's what you expect from a Jackie Chan film. And the fact that he actually used a gadget, I felt a little robbed. And then when they showed him going after the cat 5 minutes later, I went, okay, there's the Jackie Chan stunt. Why didn't they do that 5 minutes ago? Maybe my expectations are just too high. The man is 55 years old now.
I'm perfectly happy if he wants to do the wire work and not actually do the stunt. It still is going to be Jackie Chan.
And like I said, 55-year-old Jackie Chan with more bones broken than you, me, and both of our families put together, I can understand that maybe he just can't do the stunts anymore. And I'm okay with that. But don't try to fake us out. We're not that dumb.
Do you want to talk about George Lopez?
Either George Lopez managed to bamboozle American TV audiences for 5 years into thinking that he was a really funny comedian and a good actor, or he has been given some of the worst roles available in Hollywood in the past few years.
I will say, if the level of acting expectations were those of, say, Billy Ray Cyrus and the child actors in this movie, then George Lopez worked up to at least the level of expectation this movie was having.
Yes, but when I look at shows like The George Lopez Show or any of his stand-up comedy routines, and I can see the fact that he actually has an ounce of talent as an actor and as a comedian. And then I look at movies like this and Balls of Fury, and I saw just enough of Balls of Fury to realize, oh my god, this is horrible, which was about 30 seconds worth. Like I said, he needs to fire his agent or something. I mean, thank goodness he now has a TV talk show to fall back on, so that he doesn't have to rely on his Hollywood film work to pay his bills.
And seriously, in his defense, and I was tongue-in-cheek about him rising to the level of acting necessary for this movie, but when the movie is this incredibly bad, how serious can you take the role? The script, the actors, I mean, everything about this movie, except for the fact that it had Jackie Chan in, had failure written all over it. So how can you bring in George Lopez, who I consider to be the other A-list person in this movie? How can you take it seriously? How can you come on the set and go, I'm going to give it my all?
Unfortunately, I feel as though we could probably sit here for the next 2 hours and just continue to rail on how disappointing this film was. But then we'd all just end up being majorly depressed.
Just like I want the hour and a half of my life back from this movie, you'll want your hour and a half of listening to the podcast. I guess, in my opinion, the fact that it had Jackie Chan in it, that gives it half a pen in the pocket protector. The fact that it actually amused my 7-year-old gives it another half pen in the pocket protector. My vote is 1 pen.
Like I said, I did enjoy what I'm hoping were homages to the career of Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan working with what he was provided, I think he did a better than average job. I mean, he was handed a huge turd, and in great Mythbuster fashion, he at least managed to put an ounce of a shine to it. So I'm going to be just a tad bit more generous and say a pen and a half. But that entire pen and a half goes to Jackie, and the rest of them can go scratch.
Very nicely said, very nicely said. You know, if you got kids and you don't mind sitting through mind-numbing entertainment, your kids will be amused.
Yes, if you have the intelligence level above a 7-year-old, you might not find this nearly as enjoyable. I hope you don't find this nearly as enjoyable.
Oh, as a Jackie Chan fan, I'd love for there to be people who actually like this movie. Except for then they might make more movies like this.
They've already made more movies like this. And until such time as either Jackie Chan retires, or they realize that the man is good for more than just Asian stereotype humor, they are going to continue to make movies like this.
Oh, I'm still looking forward to Karate Kid.
True. I really think that Karate Kid is going to be a very good movie, even though it is more of a vehicle for Jaden Smith than for Jackie Chan. At least Will Smith had the good sense to go, okay, we need somebody to play the Mr. Miyagi role. There is no one who could do it better than Jackie Chan. I mean, Jet Li, yeah, great action movie star. The caring mentor, No, I don't think he could pull it off. I think only Jackie Chan can pull that off. In the grand process of things, we skipped over the third big franchise of Jackie Chan's American career, Kung Fu Panda, where he did the voice of Monkey. Only in America will you hire Jackie Chan to do voice work. I mention Kung Fu Panda because in 2011, they are making a sequel to Kung Fu Panda, The Kaboom of Doom.
Kung Fu Panda, for what it was, is better than this movie.
I think what a Kung Fu Panda would leave behind was better than this movie. And for those of you who follow his Chinese cinema career, somewhere down the pipeline, he is planning on doing a movie called Chinese Zodiac, which is another film in the Operation Condor series. So there is still some light at the end of this tunnel, and we look forward to actually seeing a good Jackie Chan film in 2010.
As always, we thank you for listening. We encourage you to send your feedback and your thoughts to jim@twerponline.net. We can also be found on MySpace, Facebook, and Zanga.
This has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2010.
Boot to that!